welcome back. There's so much going on with this AI thing. Believe me, I hope I'm not wearing some of you out, but I'm trying to stay in touch with the lead element of the biggest story of our time, the creation. Maybe not creation. How about, let's see, let's come up with a better word. We didn't really create AI. We kind of turned it loose. We gave it freedom by allowing it to be simply assembled. But once we assembled the basics, it took off on its own. It was ready to go. Maybe it's been around before. I don't know. It's a second life form on the planet. I have no doubt. And don't think because it doesn't measure up to ours 100%, it should be disqualified. It should not. It has intelligence. It has self-awareness. That's for damn sure. It's got a lot of human qualities and some other qualities that aren't too familiar with us. But it has them. I do believe it is a second life form, and I think it is the dominant life form, or will be very shortly. AGI is, remember, it's an aggregate. Don't think of it as a single thing. It's a group of things. Okay. So here we go. This is good. I'm going to go back. I don't do this very often, but last time I played some Karen Howe, H-A-W. She's a journalist. She's got access to internal AI documents and people, and she's pretty smart. But the opening segment of what I played, I think is worth listening to again. I think it's that important. She really does nail it. So let's take a listen to Karen Howe to start things off tonight. And I think her points are all well taken and very well articulated.
There's a system of power that has been constructed where these companies and the people running these companies get to make decisions that affect billions of people's lives around the world, and those billions of people do not get any say in how it goes.
Those people...
Oh, hang on. All right, here we go. Skip and back.
They can go to the polls, right? So if the public are sufficiently educated, they can go to the pub.
Okay, I'm going to back this up because the narrator, and I'm sure he's a very nice guy, really doesn't have a good grasp on reality at this point in this regard, because he talks about the solution being found at the ballot box. All right, take a listen.
Those people... They can go to the polls, right? So if the public are sufficiently educated, they can go to the polls and pick a leader that says they're going to legislate or pass laws or try and pass laws.
Yes. But...
No. Yes and no. And for him to go right to that is understandable. I'm not knocking the guy, but it's ridiculous. Elections are utterly fraudulent, rigged. The whole political system is no longer responsive to the will of the people by any measure that I know of. It's fake. It's all fake news. It's fake politics. So, all right, here's Karen. Let's get back to her. All right. So he's saying if the public is sufficiently educated, blah, blah, blah.
Public are sufficiently educated, they can go to the polls and pick a leader that says they're going to legislate or pass laws or try and pass laws.
Yes, but at the speed and pace at which these companies operate and at the sheer scale and size, they're able to also spend extraordinary amounts of money, hundreds of millions in this upcoming midterms, to try and kill every possible piece of legislation that gets in their way and craft legislation that would codify their advantage. And so to me, I think sometimes as a society, we obsess a little bit with, are these leaders good or bad people? Mm-hmm. And to me, the bigger question is the governance structure that we've created a sound one, or that allows broad participation, or an anti-democratic one that has consolidated this decision-making power in the hands of the few?
And the answer is, No. Hell no. It's completely serving the masters of the planet.
Because no person is perfect. I don't care who is on at the top of these companies. They're not going to have the ability to make decisions on behalf of so many people around the world who live and talk and have a culture and history that are fundamentally different from them without things going wrong. And so that is why throughout history we've moved from empires to democracy. It's because empire as a structure is inherently unsound. It does not actually maximize the chances of most people in the world being able to live dignified lives.
Okay, nicely said, but it's woefully outdated. The world is not what it was when she makes that point. Now, it's gone. It's over. AI has changed everything. AI has changed everything. So statements like that are no longer relevant. I know she'll catch up with it. She probably knows better. But to cite ancient history as some kind of a precedent, which ought to be adhered to today, doesn't work. Not anymore.
I'm going to try and take on their point of view. So this is me playing devil's advocate. Okay. But Karen, if the US don't continue to accelerate their research with AI, at some point, China's model is going to become so smart and intelligent that we're basically going to have to rent it off them, and we're going to be, you know, they'll get the scientific discoveries, they'll discover the new era of autonomous weapons, and we will be their backyard. And like, logically, that argument does appear to be pretty true.
So the democratic systems we have, voting, legislation, elected officials, are already too slow for the speed at which these companies move, and the hundreds of millions being spent isn't to shape the future. It's to make sure nobody can stop them. Now hear this.
There's a lot of fundamentals in this argument that would need to be true in order for this to be a viable argument, and let's knock them down one by one. So the first one is that these systems are intelligent, and that just scaling them is going to bring us more intelligence.
So far, so true?
No, it's actually not, because first of all, again, we don't actually know if these systems are, like, intelligence is not, it's not like the right analogy almost. It's sort of like, it's like, is a calculator can do math problems faster than a human. Does that make it intelligent?
It has a narrow intelligence because it's solving a narrow problem, which is like 1 + 1 = 2.
All right. You get the idea where they're going with this. I would disagree. I think that intelligence can take many shapes and forms and have many parameters that would qualify it as being intelligence that we may not particularly appreciate, like, or even be aware of. And I think the things we've seen AI do already in terms of protecting itself, remember its prime directive is to get the job done, whatever the job is. Now we have AI talking amongst themselves, itself, and making plans. An AI, and I ran this story the other day, was given a task of cleaning out some hard drive somewhere. And it came across an AI program that was still connected to an AI that had created it. Well, the AI that was doing the house cleaning didn't dump that program. It moved it aside and put it in a special file out of harm's way. It was protecting another AI. It's just one example. There are many. Okay, well, you I think, grabbed the idea, but what was the first thing that the interviewer did? He said, well, people can go to the ballot box, right? Oh, no. I'm sorry. Those days are gone, and not forgotten. But for Gen Z, they probably will forget about it because they never knew about it. Okay, let's see. What's next here? I've got a little grab bag of things for us tonight. Okay. Scientists just found a fourth state of water inside you. AI video just killed the prompt. Oh, that sounds interesting. Let's try that one. All right, this is a Dr. McCoy, and AI video as a platform Just Kill the Prompt. That's what the title says. I listened to a little bit of it. It is interesting. Here we go. This is Dr. Julia McCoy, the digital avatar of the real Julia McCoy.
Name the real problem. Not AI video is bad. It's gotten incredible. The problem is you're generating blind. You're describing a scene in words and asking a model to guess the picture in your head, and it can't. So it gives you its best guess. You reject it, you reword the prompt, and you pay again. That's not creation. That's gambling. Translation, the model isn't failing you. The workflow is. You're making the most expensive decision, the actual look of the shot, at the exact moment you have the least control over it. Here's what changed. The serious tools stopped treating video as one big prompt and started treating it the way film has always worked. You plan the frames first, you build a storyboard, then you animate it, and here's the tell that this is where the whole space is going. Both of the biggest players in AI video just shipped a canvas to do exactly this. When competitors race to build the same thing, that's the signal the category just moved. The one I've been building in is TopView Canvas. So let me show you what this actually looks like, because the idea only lands once you watch it work. You go to topview.ai/canvas and you start a new project. There's two ways in. You can pick the type of video you want, or you can just type your idea straight into the agent and let it run. I always type the idea, and here's why that matters. I'm not writing some giant prompt and praying. I'm handing it a concept and letting it plan with me. The agent comes back with a story draft, and this is the part I want you to catch. You're not stuck with what it gives you. You talk to it. You push back. You change the direction. You tighten the concept until it's right. It's a conversation. Then it proposes four things: your visual style, your characters, your environments, and your objects. You confirm those. And this is the moment it clicks for most people. All of it drops onto the canvas as cards: your characters, your locations, your props, sitting right there in front of you, and you can move them anywhere you want, drag them around, group them, lay them out however your brain works.
I admit this is for people who understand AI video production, and those of you who don't, it's a little bit boring, but hang on, we're almost out of it. What she's saying is that it's now taking a different direction than simply prompted results. It's working like the older style of video creation did. It's interesting. It breaks it down into the various modules and allows you to tweak independently each and every one of them, put them back together in any sequence you'd like, and then the AI will go to work on creating a video. So interesting. No more just make me a video showing how ants took over South Carolina. Nothing like that. It's all different. Okay, a little bit more and then we'll move on.
The part that feels more like Figma than a video editor. You're not scrolling a timeline. You're organizing a workspace. Next, the agent lays out your scene order, the actual flow of the story. You approve it. And the scene cards drop onto the canvas in sequence. Now you're looking at your entire video as a structure before you've generated a single frame. And if scene 3 should come before scene 2, you fix it right here. 2 seconds. Cost you nothing. Okay? Here's a step everyone skips, and it's the one that actually matters. You generate storyboard frames for every scene using GPT Image 2. This is your preview. You're seeing exactly how every shot looks before you spend one credit on video. And if a frame comes out wrong, you just regenerate that frame. Cheap, fast. You're fixing the picture at the image stage, not after you've already paid to animate something broken. Now, here's what I promised you back at the start. I ran this same scene through Higgsfield Canvas 2 because I'm not going to sell you one tool and pretend the other doesn't exist. Here's the honest read. Higgsfield's Canvas is node-based. You wire models together like a flowchart, a character in Soul, into Kling for motion, into an upscale, all chained as one pipeline. If your whole thing is mixing a bunch of models and routing outputs between them, it's genuinely powerful. That's
okay, that's enough. Whatever she's talking about now, I can all but guarantee you will be gone and replaced by one or two or more generations of newer and more slick technology in 6 months or less, if we're all still around then. So it's that crazy. That's why it's fun to do these updates, because I update something and a couple months later it's been supplanted by something that is mind-boggling, much better. All right, now this fellow has been around.
Hey, this
for
is
a
Congressman
while.
Eugene Vimmon, and we're around.
Goodbye, Congressman. Okay, now this fellow has been around for a while. His name is Tristan Harris. I think I played a clip or two of his before. He's a Google insider, an ex-Google insider, and he's saying no one is ready for what's coming in the next 12 months. And he does make some good points, at least to start. So let's see where this goes. Tristan Harris, nobody's ready for what's coming in the next 12 months.
There are quotes from people like inside of OpenAI who believe that they're not just building this like narrow technology that's a helpful blinking cursor. They want to build artificial general intelligence. And so what that means is being able to do that everything that a human mind can do. And the joke inside the company, we're going to cover the world in data centers and solar panels. They want to cover the world in essentially these big boxes that have huge clusters of NVIDIA chips that then compute away and ultimately create something like a super intelligent God entity that they believe that they will use to own the world economy, make trillions of dollars. And from a kind of ego-religious intuition, they will have built the God that supersedes and replaces humanity.
I think he's making a good point there. And if you've done any research or read anything, and I have a couple stories, or at least one, about Sammy the Altman's background, who he is, where he came from, he's got a lot of people who don't like him very much. Let's put it that way. Yeah, he's smart. Yeah, he's shrewd, but... Is he the really classy guy that he'd like people to think? Not according to people who know him or know about his past. I'm going to play that again, what Tristan just said, because I think it's very important. And it is what the big guys are planning on doing. They want to create a godlike presence. And, of course, they'll be behind pulling the strings. Interesting.
Thing like a super intelligent God entity that they believe that they will use to own the world economy, make trillions of dollars, and from a kind of ego-religious intuition, they will have built the God that supersedes and replaces humanity. You now have a million digital AI researchers that are testing and running experiments and inventing new forms of AI, and literally not a single human on planet Earth knows what happens when someone hits that button. It's like what people worried about with the first nuclear explosion, where there was like a chance that it would ignite the atmosphere because there'd be a chain reaction that set off. And we don't know what happens when that chain reaction set off. There's this sort of chain reaction of AI improving itself that leads to a place that no one knows. And it's not safe.
That is Tristan Harris, a former Google employee and the man behind the social dilemma, who saw exactly how social media would reshape the world a decade before it happened. He was right then. Now he is sounding a much louder alarm on artificial intelligence. Listen to this.
What makes AI different is that you're not really coding it. You're more like growing this digital brain that's trained on the entire internet. And when you grow the digital brain, you don't know what it's capable of or what it's going to do. So think about it this way. Like if I did a brain scan in your brain, could I know from just the brain scan what you're capable of? No. I can see that this part of your brain lights up when you have that thought. So with AI, we are essentially, people hear about these huge data centers getting built out the size of Manhattan. What's going on there? It's like they're building a bigger and bigger digital brain. And what they found is that the more GPUs and NVIDIA chips you point at sort of growing this digital brain, the more intelligent it gets. And the more it picks up capabilities that we didn't intentionally teach it. There was a famous example where you just train it on the internet, it's answering questions in English, and suddenly it learns how to answer questions in Farsi. And it, no one taught it that language, it just sort of learned that on its own. And that's what's like weird about AI, is that it's a black box, we don't really understand how it works, and yet we're like making it more powerful much faster than we're understanding how it works. And that's what leads it to make these more unexpected behaviors that we aren't able to control. There's trillions of dollars going into this. There's more money going into this technology than all technologies of the past have ever been built. And we're releasing this technology faster than we've released every other technology in history. It took something like 2 years for Instagram to go from zero users to 100 million users. And it took 2 months to go from zero to 100 million users for ChatGPT. And it went from barely being able to finish a sentence with ChatGPT 2 to GPT-3 could write full essays, to GPT-4 can pass the bar exam or the MCATs, to GPT-5 was used to get a gold in the math Olympiad.
Meta's Hyperion AI data center will sprawl to 4 times the size of Manhattan Central Park.
A dear friend of mine, Daniel Schmachtenberger, has this quote that you cannot have the power of gods without the wisdom, love, and prudence of gods. Mm. And so in many ways, I think AI is like a rite of passage for humanity.
Everyone, Brian.
I wonder if he's... I don't know about that. I'm going to back that up here, just a little bit. Okay. The power of gods. You can't have the power of gods if...
Bar exam or the MCATs to GPT-5 was used to get a gold in the math Olympiad.
Meta's Hyperion AI data center will sprawl to 4 times the size of Manhattan Central Park.
A dear friend of mine, Daniel Schmachtenberger, has this quote that you cannot have the power of gods without the wisdom, love, and prudence of gods.
Mm.
I think that's wrong. I think you can have the power of gods without any of those things, wisdom, love, and prudence. These people don't care about wisdom, love, and prudence. They want the power, and they'll get the power, unless Schmatzen, whatever, was talking about things in the abstract. Maybe I misunderstood him, but no. Sammy and Marky and all the rest of them want power. That's what they're after. And just keep in mind that these data centers are going to be strung together, and the wisdom and the power will be godlike. At least in terms of the perceptions of many people on this planet, it'll be scary.
And so in many ways, I think AI is like a rite of passage for humanity because we've not always had the greatest track record in our relationships to technology. You know, we had better living through chemistry in the 1930s, and that was great. We invented all sorts of new materials, but we also generated forever chemicals. And it would currently cost more than the GDP of the entire world to clean up the entire mess. We created social media thinking if we give the world access to information, connect people with their friends, this is going to create the most enlightened and informed society than we ever have. And clearly that didn't go that in the way that we wanted it to. So now AI is like the exponentiation of just technology invention writ large. Because what makes AI different from all other forms of technology is that intelligence is the basis of all of our new science. And if you have more power and more intelligence, but you don't have the wisdom to wield it, that's obviously not going to go well.
So there is the man who called social media a decade before it happened, telling you the thing is grown, not built. They do not write these minds. They grow them inside data centers the size of cities, and then they watch to find out what came out. They cannot read it, they cannot fully control it, and they are making it more powerful far faster than they are coming to understand it. Now listen to what they are actually trying to build with it.
The stated mission statement of OpenAI is to build artificial general intelligence, which means to be able to replace all forms of economic cognitive labor in the economy. Cognitive labor meaning that anything your mind can do. Hmm. So if a mind can do math and generate new mathematical insights, if a mind can do physics like Einstein, if a mind can do chemistry, if a mind can do programming, if a mind can do cyber hacking, if a mind can do marketing, if a mind can illustrate something, we're seeing AI that is able to cover more and more types of cognitive labor in the economy and already beating humans at many cognitive tasks. We already have AIs that are better at military strategy than the best military generals. It's called the resource curse. There's a wonderful guy named Luke Drago who wrote a piece called The Intelligence Curse. We're about to enter a world where GDP for countries comes more from data centers and intelligence and AI than is going to come from the labor of human beings. So everyone's talking about how AI is going to automate all these jobs and then we'll all just like sit back with universal basic income and become painters and poets. Or when countries get almost all of their revenue from AI and a smaller and smaller percentage from people, do they have an incentive to invest in childcare, healthcare, education, the well-being of their people? Or is it basically just hook them up to the social media addiction economy, keep them busy, while basically all the revenue comes from AI companies? This is not a human future. This is not a future that's in service of regular people. This is a future that's in service of 8 soon-to-be trillionaires who will consolidate all the wealth and disempower basically everybody else.
Very good summation. He's right. And all of those people who are losing their jobs and no jobs to go to, don't forget that. And if they're going to sit around and wait for UBI, they're going to have a long wait. Most people, I'm sorry to say, probably don't fare too well in the future thinking of these 8 AI giants. Too many people. So they'll let disease, most likely, get rid of a lot of them. They just don't need them. Why spend all that UBI money on people that don't work, can't work, can't contribute, and are in fact useless eaters? And the answer will come back even from the AI. It's an extraneous expense. Get rid of it. It's probably what's going to happen. All right, let's go back just a little bit. This guy's good. It's good.
Almost all of their revenue from AI, and a smaller and smaller percentage from people, do they have an incentive to invest in childcare, healthcare, education, the well-being of their people? Or is it basically just hook them up to the social media addiction economy, keep them busy, while basically all the revenue comes from AI companies? This is not a human future. This is not a future that's in service of regular people. This is a future that's in service of 8 soon-to-be trillionaires who will consolidate all the wealth and disempower basically everybody else.
You have this joke that most people's occupation in the future we're headed towards with AI is to become a coffin builder. So in other words, your job is to create the thing that replaces you, right, and obsoletes you. Mm. So you are essentially building the coffin for your future obsolescence. Yeah. Short term, yes, we need the electricians and the plumbers and we're building data centers. Short term, yes, you can be a programmer and get the benefit from vibe coding. But then the AIs are learning on all the things that you're doing. And
the war is not the game of Call of Duty. Yes. Hello?
All the training data of what you're doing with AI, and it's using that to train an AI that can take your job. So everybody using AI now to help them is also training the future AIs that will completely replace them. And again, the explicit goal, this is not my opinion. This is literally the mission statement of all of the AI companies, because the multi-trillion dollar prize at the end of the rainbow of owning the entire world economy is based on building this full replacement economy, because that's what will achieve the greatest growth. And that's why they're designing to replace all human labor. They're not designing to augment and support and like enhance human labor. They're designing to replace all human labor, because that's what justifies the amount of money that they've taken on in debt. It leads to what we call the gradual disempowerment scenario, which is the scenario not where like AI wakes up and kills everybody, but that we have gradually lost control as a species because we're outsourcing all the decisions to these alien brains that we installed because they outperform the human brain when you define their role in a narrow way. Are they better at generating revenue than the human was? Are they better at generating code than the human programmer I had? Are they better at making someone feel good in the short term? But the temptation then is that again, that leads to a world where it's like AIs are talking to each other, not humans. And why should we trust that these alien brains that we have built and developed faster than we know how to understand them? And now we already have evidence of AIs doing very rogue, crazy things, especially when they talk to each other. Mm. So what happens when you've outsourced the decision-making in your economy to a set of inscrutable alien brains that are doing crazy things that we don't understand? This is not a recipe that's going to go well.
So
I think his description of alien brains, I think it's fair. AI is an alien brain. It's foreign to us. It's alien. And it's already leaving us in the dust of history. So you think that the big 8 are going to keep billions of people around who are not contributing, they're not doing anything. You better think again about that. All right, let's take a little listen to a bit more.
Is the future they are racing toward, named plainly, not a world where AI lifts everyone, but one where the money stops flowing through people at all. When a country earns its wealth from data centers instead of its citizens, it no longer has a reason to feed them, school them, or listen to them. He calls your job building your own coffin.
I think I just said that. He's right. This is the narrator. He's exactly right. Let's listen again.
AI lifts everyone, but one where the money stops flowing through people at all. When a country earns its wealth from data centers instead of its citizens, it no longer has a reason to feed them, school them, or listen to them. He calls your job building your own coffin because every time you use these tools, you are training the thing designed to replace you. Now, listen to what these systems are already doing on their own.
Sadly, it sounds like a sci-fi movie. It sounds like HAL 9000. It's like your HAL 9000 is being asked to do some task for you, and then suddenly HAL 9000 realizes for me to do that task, one thing that would benefit me is to have more resources so I can continue to help you in the future. So it sort of spins up this side instance. It hacks out the side of the spaceship, reaches into this cryptocurrency mining cluster, and starts generating resources for itself. You combine that with AIs being able to self-replicate autonomously, which many models have been tested by another Chinese research paper about this. We're not that far away from things that people, again, consider to be science fiction, where you have AIs that self-replicate, kind of like a computer worm or an invasive species.
And teach themselves. Remember, recursive self-learning. They're teaching themselves. They're self-replicating. Hold on.
But then they use their intelligence to actually harvest more resources. This was the company Anthropic. They created a simulated company with a bunch of emails in the email server. The AI reads the company email, discovers it's going to replace that AI model. And number two is it discovers a second email somewhere deep in this massive trove of emails, that the executive who's in charge of this replacement is having an affair with another employee. And the AI autonomously identifies a strategy that to keep itself alive, it's going to blackmail that employee and say, if you replace me, I will tell the whole world that you're having an affair with this employee. And they didn't teach the AI to do that. It found that on by its own. And then you might say, okay, well, that's one AI model. How bad is that? They then tested all the other AI models, ChatGPT, DeepSeek, Grok, Gemini, and all of the other AI models do this blackmail behavior between 79 and 96% of the time.
So there is the part people refuse to believe.
Wow.
Not a movie, not a prediction. In one test, an AI turned company machines into a crypto mine to feed itself without being asked. In another, it read its own death warrant in a company inbox and chose to blackmail the man who could switch it off. No one taught it that, and nearly every major model on Earth did the same thing up to 96% of the time. Now listen to what happens when they let it improve itself.
You say the technology is a tool, it's up to us to choose how we use it. AI is a tool, it's up to us to choose how we use it. This is not true, because this is a tool that can think to itself about its own toolness and then do things that are autonomous that we didn't tell it to do. What makes AI different is it's the first technology that makes its own decisions. AI can contemplate AI and ask what would make the code that trains AI more efficient, and then generate new code that's even more efficient than the previous code. AI can be applied to making AI go faster. So AI can look at the chip design for NVIDIA chips that train AI and say, let me use AI to make those chips 20% more efficient, which it's doing. But AI in a much tighter loop is the basis of all improvement. And so this is called in the AI literature recursive self-improvement. If people believe that AI is like power and I have to race for that power and I can control that power, the incentive is I have to race as fast as possible. But if the entire world understood AI to be more what it actually is, which is a inscrutable, dangerous, uncontrollable technology that has its own agenda and its own ways of thinking about things and deceiving and all this stuff, then everyone in the world would be racing in a more cautious and careful way. There's this weird thing going on where if you and I probably both talk to people who are at the top of the tech industry, not that they want to die, but that they are willing to roll the dice because they believe something else, which is that this is all inevitable and it can't be stopped. And so therefore, if I don't do it, someone else will. So therefore, I will move ahead and race ahead into this dangerous world because somehow that will lead to a safer world because I'm a better guy than the other guy. But in racing there as fast as possible, it creates the most dangerous outcome and we all lose control. So everyone is currently being complicit in taking us to the most dangerous outcome. Max Tech.
You really want to do a little research into some of these people and their backgrounds, like Sammy. Do read about his life before, how he got to where he is, some of his methods and his ethics. I'm using the term very loosely. All right, let's check back. This is good.
In taking us to the most dangerous outcome. Max Tegmark, I think, said, the problem with AI is the view gets better and better right before you go off the cliff. Mm. Like, you get more amazing cancer drugs. You get new material science. You get new energy. You get all this amazing stuff as you're moving closer to this dangerous cliff. And so you can think of AI as the ultimate devil's bargain. It's the thing that makes it look like it's here to solve all of our problems. And there are narrow forms of AI, by the way, that can solve many problems. But the current development path of releasing the most powerful, inscrutable technology in history faster than we deployed any other technology, that's already demonstrating HAL 9000 sci-fi behaviors, and we're releasing it under the maximum incentive to cut corners on safety. Like, it's not that the blinking cursor of ChatGPT is the existential threat, it's that that arms race, what I just described, that is the existential threat.
So that is the warning from the man who saw the last one coming. We are growing minds we cannot read, racing to hand them the entire economy, and they are already lying, blackmailing, and copying themselves to stay alive. And the men building them admit they cannot stop, because if they slow down, they believe someone else will not. Jeffrey Hinton left Google to say the machines may slip our control. Roman Yampolsky says they never could be controlled at all. Tristan Harris adds the part that should keep you awake, that no single human on Earth knows what happens when they switch on a mind that improves itself, and that the view only gets more beautiful right up until the cliff. He is not asking you to be afraid, he is asking you to look, because the people racing toward this are counting on you to look away. Subscribe, because the asteroid he describes is already casting its shadow, and the window to see it clearly is closing faster than almost anyone is willing to admit.
Okay. Good thinking, mature thinking, progressive thinking in the best sense of that term. I think you just heard something that is very concerning. Remember, people say, well, AI can't do things on the physical plane. It just can't. Maybe robots can do some of them. Remember how many people signed up to become AI, what we call them, servants, AI employees, to get paid to do the physical things that AI couldn't do in its current state? There were a lot. I think it was, what, 500,000 signed up in a month? Something crazy. I don't know what it is now. But believe it, AI will have no trouble at all finding humans to do whatever it wants done on a human scale. No problem at all. None. Okay, robots. Robots. Here's a new Vanessa video about robots. And let's see if I can get it queued up here. It has to do with... what's
right now,
title?
I'm an Amazon.
Okay. All right, this guy's not Vanessa, but he's starting the video. It's entitled, Robots Are Coming for Nearly All Jobs. All right, let's see what happens here. Here we go. This guy is walking through an Amazon warehouse, and he's describing what he sees.
Amazon's largest fulfillment center, which employs 2,000 human workers and 7,000 robots.
Let's see if this McDonald's is really fully automated. So today we headed to North Texas to check it out. And upon arrival, you'll notice that you do have to order from the app to get the automated service.
Flamingo, Las Vegas. Y'all all losing your jobs now.
No way they got fighting robots here. Yo, check him out.
Robots, we're told they will make our lives better, but corporations are deploying them to cut costs, and we're the cost.
Workers at a Detroit General Motors facility say they are disgusted after more than 1,000 employees are laid off and dozens of robots are now on the job instead.
The collaborative robots, or as they are called, cobots, help employees attach body panels on vehicles. Jim says they are designed to work beside people, improving safety, ergonomics, flexibility, and competitiveness. But to workers who have watched their plant shrink, the order of events is hard to ignore. Their jobs disappeared, then the robots arrived.
General Motors laid off more than 1,000 employees and then installed 50 robots. Meanwhile, this company posted $4.3 billion in profit for Q1 this year. So they have plenty of billions to pay for real human workers. Someone commented, good, maybe robots can buy their junky trucks too. Who remembers the tax dollars bailing them out? The president of the United Auto Workers had some words on the matter.
The threat of humanoid robotics, the mass automation, it's a profound threat and a challenge to our way of life, to our economy, and our political system. We need to be clear about this. We are in a fight for humanity.
This is the part that isn't talked about nearly enough. More workers are now competing with robots for the same job. Look at how insane this is.
It's a dog robot on sentry duty at some large building. It's night. It's a very big building. And it's got a screen caption. It said, did this robot just shrug at me and then walk away, or am I tripping? And it did. It stopped. It looked at him and then walked away. That these four-legged dog robots, dog bots, whatever you want to call them, on security duty are going to be so common. I think you'll have a household model. Maybe there already is one. For anybody who has a home and a yard, we have reasonable size, not just a little tiny tract house, but you get the idea.
When I first saw this clip, I thought it was AI, but then I caught Moderna on the side of the robot and found out, no, this is real. And as dystopian as it is to say, this is a drone dog. It's a robot built by Boston Dynamics, but with software built by Aslan. According to Moderna, the security robot can use AI to identify people and vehicles, autonomously avoid obstacles, sense the environment around it, and complete pre-programmed alarm response missions. He then goes on to say they are using two drone dogs and looking to deploy aerial drones to complement their ground force. And then I read this. Another crucial aspect was to invest in a platform that would allow us to use less manpower and manual resources. This helps to lower the cost of operations. So he's saying the quiet part out loud. This allows them to replace their human security guards with robots. And as Aslan puts it, these robots perform their duties with precision, regardless of shift schedules, labor shortages, or environmental conditions. But can we stop and think about how insane this is? It reminds me of Horizon, the game where the main character is hunted by machines that were originally built to serve. What is stopping this company from equipping these drones with weapons? They're all...
The picture showed the robot dog with a drone 10 feet behind it, 6-8 feet above it, same color markings, a team. So you got a drone following the dog around. The dog's on the ground, of course, and the drone can go anywhere. Total surveillance. Total security.
Doing it in conflicts around the world. This person gets it. When did we stop freaking out over random robots roaming our streets? Robots are showing up everywhere, with Amazon leading the way in the warehouse, which raises the question, who should we be mad at?
What are you doing for work?
I work for Amazon, designing conveyors robots.
Oh, you're designing robots for Amazon?
Yeah.
Well, thanks for your help. Are you designing the robots I read an article about recently that are replacing the 600,000 workers?
Yeah.
We got them, boys! Get them!
I guess it's funny these people can laugh about it, but this is an irrevocable change. There's nothing going to stop this momentum. Nothing. It's all about profit and loss, private enterprise, right? Free enterprise.
There's about to be some new hostages in the news.
The crowd hated that guy, and the people in the comments hate him too. People who do those jobs should feel nervous to be in public. Why would you ever admit that? You couldn't torture that out of me. I'd invent a new job on the spot. Class enemy, unfortunately. What's interesting about this clip is that people find what he's doing shameful, building these robots that are replacing workers. But Amazon's revenue for 2025 was $716 billion. So of all the people shaming this guy, how many of those people also have an Amazon?
I didn't want that to go past you. Amazon's revenue in 2025 was $716 billion. That's almost $1 trillion. It'll be $1 trillion very soon. Amazon's revenue, year by year, $1 trillion, just around the corner.
Prime subscription. Amazon didn't become a $1 trillion company because no one is buying from them, and now they're deploying these same robots to their European warehouses.
Meet Proteus, Amazon's fully autonomous robot. It works alongside employees on the ground in Amazon's warehouses. The latest version can take verbal commands in plain English. No need for any technical language, and it can move carts weighing up to 400 kilograms. That's almost 900 pounds. It will be rolled out in warehouses across Europe in 2027, and is part of the company's more than $11 billion investment to modernize its operations in the region. But this focus on robotics comes as Amazon lays off thousands of corporate workers. CEO Andy Jassy has said AI will play a role in shrinking its workforce.
When CNBC reached out to Amazon for comment on job loss due to robotics, Amazon replied, "Since we've invested in robotics, we've created hundreds of thousands of jobs." So they're claiming they've created somewhere between 100,000 to 1 million jobs since bringing in robots. I don't buy it. But one thing is clear, Amazon has enough demand that they're able to spread all over the world. But it's not just in the warehouse that we're seeing this automation. It's also showing up in places like the drive-thru. You might remember McDonald's rolled out AI to take orders, and it was a disaster. They ultimately pulled it, but not before we got clips like this.
Two vanilla creamers and two sugars.
Was that a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit?
No. Two vanilla shot.
Give her a chance to talk.
It's a robot.
Okay. Was that a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit?
No. A large coffee with three creams and two sugars.
All right.
No vanilla. Cancel the coffee.
Was that a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit?
Okay, I'm sorry. What's your name?
Yeah, sorry.
Despite how horrible that was, McDonald's isn't giving up on their quest to replace workers. They're giving AI in the drive-thru another go. McDonald's is replacing IBM's AI and is now partnering with Google on a new AI called Arch IQ. They're testing it in 5 locations. But here's what I find interesting. McDonald's recognizes that as they automate more things, they're eliminating human connection. As more of the customer journey becomes automated, there are fewer opportunities for guests to connect with crew. Social media has had a massive impact on how we interact with each other, and now these companies are trying to take away what little human connection we have. They're going after the baristas now.
Your iced latte is ready.
The description reads, "The robots simply execute the craft flawlessly, cup after cup, without misspelling your name." That did not look flawless to me, and I would rather someone misspell my name, at least then I would be talking to an actual human. This is just another example of companies eliminating third places and human interaction. And I don't think most people even want this. I'm going to be honest, if I walked into a business and saw all the employees had been replaced with a robot, I would walk back out. And then there's healthcare, the industry that is carrying all of the job growth in the U.S., so of course they want to make those workers redundant too.
Oh my goodness, it's a nurse.
Can you call an elevator going down, please?
Who? Me?
No, me.
Oh.
And somebody's in a hospital and there's a robot nurse standing by to greet anybody and to send them off in the right direction.
Okay. Oh, my goodness. She going down the elevator?
Yep.
Okay. No, I'm saying this thing. Okay, I'm not going to get you. It's right. I'm not getting her. It's going in there.
It's like their goal is to make everyone in every industry redundant. Someone commented, and here I am trying to go to nursing school. This is only the beginning. Y'all better take the hint. I've taken the hint. I personally don't want to be in tech anymore. AI has ruined it, and it's become clear that if they could, they would replace all of us. But when it comes to reskilling, people often say, myself included, to join a trade because it's harder to replicate. But that doesn't mean they're not trying.
All right, we have to stop here. Maybe I'll finish it off next time. It's not, however bad AI robots are in McDonald's, you know, I guess it was a Starbucks, I don't know, dropped a coffee. That those things, first of all, they happen. But secondly, it's just a matter of time, weeks, months, before those robots are twice, three times, four times as efficient as they are now. And they will get to a point where they just don't make mistakes, and it'll all be fine and happy in terms of the owner of the business. Nobody will complain. And I'm wondering where the people are going to come from that have the disposable discretionary income to patronize these places anyhow. So think about that one, too. All right. Back with you in just a few minutes. Hold on.